From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Pleasanton.
Fall Town.
Richmond.
Sunset.
Oakland, California.
Concord, California.
Fairfield.
Foothill.
Coming up, we'll pay a visit to one of the Bay Area's lesser-known baseball teams, the San Quentin All-Stars.
I feel like a kid in the candy store right now. You know, I get a chance to just really just play the game I love, man, and give it all and leave it on the field.
Then we'll meet a former prison inmate turned activist who's fighting discrimination against formerly incarcerated people.
It was structural in nature. It wasn't just a feeling. You can visibly see it. You can visibly see it right now.
And we take you on a journey to the other side for the answer to this week's Audiograph Mystery Sound.
Is there anyone in here that'd like to speak with us today?
Take a walk with us into the unknown today on Cross Currents. It's no secret that baseball has been in the air here in San Francisco. Yes, the San Francisco Giants won it all yesterday, beating the Kansas City Royals to take their third World Series crown in 5 years. When we think about playing baseball, we may imagine the game being played in parks, schoolyards, or in stadiums, but we might not expect to see a game being played inside prison walls.
Oh, good hit! Good hit!
Last year, KALW News joined forces with the San Quentin Prison Report to bring you a better glimpse inside California's oldest prison through radio stories produced by inmates themselves.
Good shot, Rico. Good shot, baby. Good
the San Quentin Prison Report.
SQPR is a media collective of prisoners and volunteers from the community working together to give voice to personal growth, social transformation, and restorative justice.
San Quentin State Prison has two baseball teams, the San Quentin Athletics and the San Quentin Giants. Last spring, a professional minor league team, the San Rafael Pacifics, came to San Quentin to play hardball against an all-star team of prisoners. Even though the players come from different circumstances, they all have one thing in common, the love of the game, as you can tell from these San Quentin players.
I started in T-ball, I think, around 6 or 7.
I've been playing baseball since I was about 3 years old. Started off in T-ball.
I mean, really, man, this brings back to my childhood. You know, I feel like I'm, 8 years old again.
I've been playing baseball my entire life.
Tommy Shakur Ross from the San Quentin Prison Report brings us the story of what happened that day out on the San Quentin ballpark.
Beautiful day for baseball here at San Quentin.
When you walk in, the first thing you see is a palm tree. Wasn't expecting that.
That's San Rafael Pacifics player Colin Allen. The palm tree he's referring to is located in the direction of center field, slightly beyond the field of play in San Quentin's lower yard. It's called the Field of Dreams. It was given that name because it was a dream come true for the prisoners who were allowed to construct a baseball diamond and play hardball in prison.
We're in prison, and we're playing baseball.
Two wooden plaques are on the backstop in front of the baseball diamond. One reads, home of the San Quentin Athletics. The other, home of the San Quentin Giants. San Quentin's Field of Dreams is also in print atop a green and white scoreboard in the vicinity of right field. The playing field is enclosed within a fence without bleachers, and nearby gun towers oversee the entire prison yard. A game like this has never happened before. It's the start of baseball season, and the Pacifics are here to play the San Quentin All-Stars. The All-Stars are the prison's best players, handpicked from the San Quentin Giants and the San Quentin Athletics. Elliot Smith is the head coach for the Giants.
The way we selected the All-Stars was based on their performance for the entire season.
John Yaya Parrott is the head coach for the Athletics.
The 8 players that the San Quentin A's put together and 8 players that the San Quentin Giants put together, it turns out to be a very talented team.
This isn't the average prison sporting event. A cameraman from a local TV station, KTVU, and radio broadcasters and commentators are here.
Nice to see the players out on the field congratulating each other and standing in line and giving each other high fives. This is what sports is like.
The atmosphere is charged with good cheer, high energy, and excitement. There's an outline of chalk on the field and about 400 spectators who are predominantly prisoners. but there are approximately 50 outside guests, including a few women that arrived with the Pacifics organization. They all are mingling and interacting with the prisoners. Some onlookers are positioned behind the backstop in both dugouts and standing behind the fence in the direction of first and third base. Others are watching from the back fence in the outfield. The game starts with an opening ceremony. The players are lining up on the baselines and removing their caps for a prisoner's rendition of the national anthem. The teams acknowledge God through prayer.
And we just pray, God, that you would give us the right attitude, the right frame of mind.
And then Lieutenant Sam Robinson, San Quentin's public information officer, throws out the ceremonial first pitch. Next, the Pacifics and the All-Stars take to the field with their game faces on.
And the 1-2 pitch. And there's a swing and a high fly ball to center field. That should be a routine play as Chris Marshall backs up and makes the catch in left center field for the first out of the ballgame.
The game gets off to an exciting start. But today is about more than winning or losing. It's about the love of the game. Here's Pacific second baseman Kendall Price.
Playing a game like baseball, to me, is a game that really mimics life. So it feels really good, man, to be in here and to be with other guys that love the game like you do. You know what I mean? And to see the joy and appreciation they get out of being able to come out here and step on this field every day.
San Quentin's all-star second baseman, Christopher Smith, says for him, this is a day of great significance.
It's monumental because this never happened before. San Quentin having an all-star game, you know, the best player in the prison or whatever playing against, you know, these dudes right here, which is supposed to be like a minor league team, you know what I'm saying?
Pacifics player Ross Pomerantz expresses a similar sentiment.
It's the opportunity of a lifetime. I don't know how many guys are going to get to say they came in here and played baseball, you know, at San Quentin. This is the type of thing you tell your grandkids, you know, your kids, your family members. I mean, this is a story right here. This is much bigger than just going out and playing baseball. I mean, this is why we play, getting to do stuff like this.
Open stance, and the next delivery is a swing and a high pop-up on the infield. That should be a routine play. The third baseman, the shortstop, going over towards the line and making the catch is the shortstop, Key Lamb. So two men gone. And a fly out and a pop out.
Two all-star players stood out to the commentators, the players, owners, and spectators alike. One of those players is the starting all-star pitcher, Jeff Dumont, who held the Pacifics without a hit for four innings.
San Francisco Pacifics could not hit the San Quentin pitcher early on.
Yes, Dumont got him 1-2-3 in the first inning.
In the second inning, they managed to get a runner aboard, but then a double play wiped that one out.
And the other all-star player.
2-0 delivery coming in there. A fastball, a fly ball in the short right field. That's going to be a tough play. And the second baseman goes back, makes a brilliant catch, throws to second base for a double play. What a play by Cleo Clement. Wow!
Cleo Clement, that is. For most people there, this was the play of the day. It was a soft flare into short right field, which went over Clement's head. He ran for the ball, dove, and made an over-the-shoulder catch. Then he rolled over, sprung to his feet, and threw to second base for a double play.
Yeah, the second baseman for you guys made a ridiculous. He needs to call us when he gets out.
And I asked Clement what this day meant to him.
I feel like a kid in the candy store right now. You know, I get a chance to just really just to play the game I love, man, and give it all and leave it on the field. I just want to just thank God, man, for this blessing, man, just to be around these gentlemen here today.
Both teams pitched a no-hitter for the first four innings. But by the bottom of the ninth inning, the San Quentin All-Stars were losing big, 17-3.
Last opportunity for San Quentin. Two outs, and there's a ground ball hit to third. A nice, easy hop. Throw to second base in time for the force, and the ball game is over.
But the general consensus here today,
it was a success for both teams, I'd say.
But most of the community from the free side of the prison wall was able to see a very different side of the prisoners than what is mostly portrayed in the mainstream media.
You know, again, I came in with a set of expectations of what it was like here in San Quentin, and it's very different than what I thought.
Eugene Luperio is managing partner of the Pacifics.
I'm proud to have brought our team here, and I hope that we do it every year.
The Field of Dreams is one place where the prisoners are not defined by their crimes. Today, they are San Quentin All-Star baseball players. This is Tommy Shakur Ross with the San Quentin Prison Report. I'm out.
That story came from the San Quentin Prison Report archives. You can hear new stories from the project starting next month exclusively here on Cross Currents.
Watching baseball, sitting in the sun, eating popcorn, reading Ezra Pound. And wishing Juan Marichal would hit a hole right through the Anglo-Saxon tradition in the first canto and demolish the barbarian invaders from Los Angeles. When the San Francisco Giants take the field and everybody stands up to the national anthem with some...
This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Being incarcerated takes away many of the rights that you would have as a free person, going places, seeing your family when you want to. But what happens when you're released? How does society view you, and what kinds of opportunities are available for you? In 1969, Dorsey Nunn was sentenced to life in prison for killing a man. After serving 12 years of his sentence, Nunn was paroled in 1981. Back on the outside, he realized there was very little help for him or people like him to make new lives. So he took matters into his own hands and started working with other formerly incarcerated people to address issues of employment, education, and voting rights. In 2003, he founded All of Us or None, an advocacy group that's won victories in its campaign to ban the box, that's eliminating the question of former incarceration on job, housing, and other applications. Dorsey Nunn came by our studios to talk about what it means to be a formerly incarcerated person. I asked him what it was like when he first stepped out of prison at the age of 31.
First of all, I had hustled when I was in prison, and I had rented an apartment 3 months before I got out. Hmm. And that was, you know, really fear-based. So on the way to get to my freedom, they never did provide a vehicle for me to sustain myself once I was out. So the whole time that I'm getting ready to come in parole, I'm doing all kind of crazy things in order to survive because I was in fear. And I was a younger man, and I got out at the age of 31 going on 32. I was extremely muscular. Because the period of time in which I served my sentence was the most violent times in the history of United States prisons. So I was always exercising, thinking that I was going to have to do combat when I was there. So it wasn't just like I exercised my mind, I exercised my body also. Mm. So then when everybody told me that I can get these jobs that everybody kept thinking I could get, they were unavailable to me because when I walked in, not only was I black, I was black, muscular, and could engage in a conversation that was quite challenging. You know, so it's like I never did get the job. When I first was released, I didn't have a flight thing in the back of my head. So I would be very confrontational because that's what the environment that I had left. You know, and I can remember getting in an argument on the bus and pulling the card and got off the bus while the person was cursing at me. And I was standing on the side of the bus laughing, just laughing and laughing and laughing because it was the first time that I realized that I didn't have to fight.
What at that time, what kind of tools, what kind of services were there out there for a person like you?
There was none available to me.
None
available to me.
You figured it out by yourself.
I figured it out. The tools that I had was...
The people.
Was the people.
Mm.
It was the people.
All of Us or None. Mm. How did it get started? Where did the idea come from? What was the need?
I guess the birth of All of Us or None comes from a concept paper that I initially wrote. And it wasn't called All of Us or None. It was called Save Ourselves. And I started writing this concept paper, and every time that I floated it out, people started giving me input. Then sooner or later, it wasn't necessarily my concept paper, and it belonged to a broader range of people who had contributed. We had a meeting in Oakland where we invited formerly incarcerated people from up and down the state of California to envision a movement about them. And what would they do with that moment? What would they do if they could build something that could speak to their needs coming from the hearts and their souls of our movement and our body of people? And that day we dreamed of a whole bunch of stuff. We start dreaming of, start recognizing that we had a commonality that we were never able to address when we were siloed the way that we were. We had conversations that we didn't get a chance to talk about when we were on the prison yards and in the jails. We start talking about when you got out, was your kids crazy? You know, we start talking as parents. We start talking as older people. We didn't make a distinction between the juvenile justice system and San Quentin prison, because there were people that were had just got out of juvenile that was in the room. And we was all experiencing this range of ideas, and we were excited about it. Then shortly after that, we went into a gathering of people. Formerly incarcerated people. We met again in New Orleans. And when we met in New Orleans, we adopted the name All of Us Anon. Shortly thereafter that, we wanted to fight structural discrimination. And in August of 2003, we went to the Congressional Black Caucus Legislative Weekend and announced that we wanted a remedy for some of the discrimination that we were facing.
And the discrimination came in the form of what? Where would you feel it?
We felt it all over. We felt it in the question of employment, because it was structural in nature. It wasn't just a feeling. You can visibly see it. You can visibly see it right now. You know, so if you go and pick up an application for employment, you're picking up an application that's going to ask you about a conviction history. In the event that you decide to apply for a student loan, you could have that question bite you again. In the event that you were going to apply for housing, you could have that question bite you. In the event that you were going to apply for life insurance, it could bite you again. That's what structural. Nobody put that on the application to actually mean that they wanted to help me. They put that on the application to screen me out. So it was structural discrimination. And when we got to the Black Caucus and we laid it out, we don't necessarily, at least I don't necessarily think they was as receptive as they could have been or should have been.
What did they say?
They didn't say very much, and they did very little.
That sounds like it was discouraging.
It was discouraging, you know. And I can remember what I was saying. I can remember, y'all don't remember Fannie Lou Hamer. Y'all don't have a clue that you got a population that could be millions of people, and in those millions of people, there could be brilliant people, and we shouldn't have the ability or think that we should have the right to throw that many people away, throw that genius away, because what we can see is that our communities have already been devastated. We could see that. So when we came back and we started organizing, out of that fight came this thing that we would fight to end structural discrimination. The first part of the campaign became known as Ban the Box. So between the time that we started and we wanted to do that, I can tell you right now that there's over 100 million people living in a jurisdiction where the box have been banned, 13 states and over 70 jurisdictions. And I can tell you, the person that walked out the gate of San Quentin walked into the gates of the White House within the last 3 weeks. So it's not necessarily where I came from, it's where I'm at and where I'm going, which is the most important part of this story. Yesterday is yesterday. Where I take this movement to this next is different.
That's Dorsey Nunn, founder of All of Us or None, a group that works to help formerly incarcerated people. You can find more information about the organization at our website, kalw.org. Click on Cross Currents. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. And now it's time for Audiograph, the Bay Area's sonic signature. Here's Audiograph's Julie Kane to bring you the answer to this week's mystery sound.
All week long, we've been playing you this sound.
So here we go. I'll start recording in 3,
two, one. Is there anyone in here that'd like to speak with us today?
We asked you what that was and where you think we recorded it. To bring you the answer, I went to Hayward, where I met up with a real-life ghost hunter at a historic estate. It's a place where some visitors have had some very strange encounters.
My name is Brendan Alvis. I'm the founder of the American Paranormal Research Association. The clearest voice we ever collected, actually here at the Meek Estate, I'll show you an example. That was that instance with the reporter from the Tri-City Voice. And again, he was holding my digital voice recorder, as well as him being a reporter. He likes to document everything. And at the exact time he asked this question, my recorder collects a disembodied voice, his recorder goes to complete static. And still to this day, he doesn't know how that happened. He still owns that recorder, and it still hasn't happened since. So you will hear Simon ask the question, and then you'll hear a very clear voice after that.
Can you come as close to the red light as possible? Can you come as close to the red light as possible?
Tell me what this voice is saying.
We believe it to be, again, it's open to interpretation. Other people hear different things, but we believe it's saying, yes, I would. I died in here. So you want to hear it again?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's go ahead and try and make our way down to that cistern and see if we can get down into that. Turn on this light. There's another one down here we can turn on as well. Watch out for the spider webs and whatnot. This is a little here. So one thing I will tell you, it's a really narrow staircase, very steep. So do not put your hands against the left-hand side of the wall. You can see there's nails sticking out. So when we go down, be very careful and do not try and put your hands against the wall. Okay? And right here, we can stop. You can see some of this mold growing here, but see the names?
Can you read those?
See, it looks like it says Helen, Sam. That's the only ones I could read. Not quite sure what the other ones are saying, but you can definitely see the name Helen and Sam. This area has had some activity, and people have reported feeling sensations down here, as well as hearing the voices of a child. Definitely one of the spookier places in the building.
Should we ask a question?
Yeah, let's do it. So we'll go ahead and start recording in 3, 2, 1. Is there a young girl down here that would like to say something to us? That was my stomach, sorry. It's in session. One of the many things, you know, that happens, we'll go in a location for hours and hours at a time and sometimes get nothing. So it's just kind of a, you know, right place at the right time kind of thing. So.
Well, no winner this week. We think you might have been too afraid to call. But don't worry, you'll have another chance to win. To find out more, head to our website, kalw.org, click on Audiograph. Thanks for listening, and thanks for playing. I'm Julie Kane.
It's the best, the best, the best team.
And that's it for today's Cross Currents from KALW News. Our team includes Leela Day, Audrey Dilling, Sandhya Dirks, Rachel Dornhelm, Nina Gensler-Debs, Colin Peden, Seth Samuel, Judy Silber, Raja Shah, Todd Whitney, and Stephen Short.
How late are we going to be out?
Oh, until the cops send us home.
Yeah, until the cops send us home.
Today's show was engineered by Chris Hoff. The line producer was Ashley Ann Kriegbaum. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Managing producer is Julie Kane. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. And you are a big part of our show, and we love hearing from you. So email us at news@kalw.org or find us on Facebook and Twitter at KALW. Because of you, we can proudly say we're listener-supported public radio.
I jumped in the air. I was just happy. I don't know what to do.
I jumped for joy.
I love the Yanks.
This is Shannon and the Clams. They're bringing their signature trashy and surfy sound to Leo's Music Club in North Oakland tomorrow night for the Total Trash Halloween Bash. Show starts at 7 o'clock. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Babo.